Thanks for watching Be Unbelievable. Join me next time as we continue the conversation every business owner needs, but rarely hears. Welcome to Be Unbelievable, where we talk with leaders who challenge limits, break molds, and redefine what's possible. I'm your host, Doug Wick. Today's conversation is about identity, not just business, but in life. Our guest, Brent Cobb, leads global manufacturing organizations, but behind the titles is a leader who has had to find his own voice in industries, communities, and rooms where expectations can quietly shape who you're supposed to be. Brent, welcome to Be Unbelievable. Today we're going to dive into what it takes to move beyond labels and lead from who you truly are, your authentic self, and offer what others can expect from you. So,
awesome.
Welcome.
Yeah, great to be here, Doug.
Yep. The challenge that many people face in feeling boxed in by roles, titles, or other people's expectations, over time, it can feel like you're performing a version of yourself instead of leading authentically. Let's talk about who you are today, all right, and beyond your title, and when did you first start discovering that deeper identity?
Sure. Yeah, I think for me, I would say I'm just a person that really enjoys problem solving. And in my current role as president of World Class, it takes the form of supply chain problems, and so get into the messiness of supply chains and operational constraints, and with the team at World Class, you know, we go to work trying to figure out how we, you know, streamline operations for our customers who are large OEM manufacturers typically, how we save costs and, you know, cut throughput.
Give me an idea, because when you say, supply chain, give us an idea. Can maybe give you an example of something you might do so people understand a little bit better what you do?
Yeah, so it takes all sorts of different forms because it really is based on the constraint that exists with our customers. But a couple examples that are visual. We work with an ag equipment company. We put together a hood enclosure for their high clearance sprayer. So we're buying a bill of material that would include, you know, 50 different components. We're developing a fixture to put that together, and then we're developing a testing apparatus to make sure that once we've assembled it, that it's going to work on the vehicle as intended.
Yeah, and then so you create it and ship it to them,
yes,
so they can put it on their on their assembly line, supposedly.
Yeah. Yeah. So in that case, they were constrained with space at the end of their at the end of their assembly line, and so we were able to, you know, take on that project, you know, not use up that space for that sub assembly operation and the storage of the components, and we just have the finished enclosure sitting there at the end of the line for
them. Let me ask this question. One more question related to that: how many different businesses do you work with right now?
So our customer list is roughly five kind of significant customers.
Yeah.
So it's not a very, you know, deep bench of customers, but all are significant.
You can give them an idea how many you've got, like four, five, six different locations.
We have nine locations.
Okay,
now.
Thank you.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, most in the Iowa, Illinois area, but also one in Augusta, Georgia, and one in Kaiserslautern, Germany.
Yeah, so you're international. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So tell me a little bit about from the outside.
Yeah.
You look very successful. What parts of your journey do people miss or perhaps misunderstand about success?
Well, I think that's kind of a typical thing. You can look at outcomes and you kind of miss, you know, some of the road or the kind of internal thought processes. And, you know, for me, I think the battle has been really around trying to micromanage sometimes or control outcomes too much. And so that's really been a big part of my story, is like really inviting more people into issues, into the creation of solutions. And so I often have to pause a little bit and you know, just start asking some good questions, and invariably I get you know, really insightful answers from the team. I mean, they're oftentimes closer to the problem. They've got better solutions than I can come up with. But you know, sometimes I feel like my default setting is kind of like control rather than invite discussion.
Yeah, and I've had the opportunity to work with your people, and they really out of all the companies that I've worked with, your teams, your leaders are extremely good. Yeah, they're really good.
I'm glad we caught it kind of at the tail end, not the beginning of my leadership journey. And, probably maybe different early on.
Well, we met through
Toastmasters.
Yeah. And you were just, how long have you been in your position?
It's been roughly 20 years.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So I must have caught you right there.
We were both
working at
working our way into it.
Yeah, and speaking better and being good. So, was there a moment when expectations, from others clashed with how you felt you truly were?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of in terms of a specific moment where
maybe something tested you. You know, a challenge?
Yeah, I think, probably the biggest challenge, and I think you have some some of this story, Doug, but fairly early on, we were very concentrated one customer in particular. So that would have been, probably 20 years ago, and actually the problem got a little bit worse fairly quickly thereafter, in that we had to exit the second biggest customer, and so that really was a big challenge for me personally, because I had taken over for my father. I didn't want to let him down. I didn't, at the time, I think World Class was about 50 employees. Didn't want to let them down. Didn't want to let down the bank or other kind of outside people that are depending on us. And so we've been. I'd say that's still in progress. We're still not on that.
Yeah, journey. But how many people do you have employees now?
Yeah, so we're in the 270 range or something now. So we definitely have grown. We've done some acquisitions. We've gotten into new customers, new industries. And it's been not everything's worked out, but generally things have trended the right direction.
Yep. When that happened.
Yep.
What were you telling yourself? I mean, from the standpoint of what story were you telling yourself? Were you looking? Because I know how we've talked about this, how you handle issues and situations and problems. You seem to have a very what I'd call positive approach to looking at situations and dealing with them. So tell me how you look at a problem.
So this kind of fits a little bit into that, that first comment. And so I think at that point, pretty early on my leadership journey, and I felt like I was, took a lot of that responsibility and a lot of that burden on myself to try to figure out all the angles and the the way that that could be kind of solved.
Yeah.
And so I tend to have kind of an analytical kind of approach to things. And so, kind of early on, it was much more about, me trying to figure out, what are the levers that need to get pulled? I think that's evolved over time and in terms of inviting more people into the creation of the solution.
And how did that evolve? How did you find the way to get through that? What changed?
Well, there's been a lot of, I don't know that it's a simple path or a straight path, but I think one of the fundamental pieces of it was exposure to a book I think you're familiar with called Traction by Gino Wickman, and the EOS process that he describes there. And I felt, reading that the first time, some light bulbs, went off in terms of, I'd never been exposed to a business operating
system
and how what that might look like, and how setting rocks for a 90-day period and inviting kind of this joint accountability into our leadership team might work. And You know, so that was really the start of that journey. And, you know, even I think even from the, I forget what they call the first couple days of that, of kind of the foundational. Kind of 2 days of getting into it, I could, you know, even feel some of the, you know, kind of pressure. And
just kind of going, wow, I don't have to do all this by myself,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. There's more people in this than in my quarter, and we're going to figure this out together and not just, you know, kind of solely me.
Yeah, cool. Good. So let me take a little bit of a break here, because up next we're going to talk about turning points, those defining moments that change everything in our discussion here with Brent Cobb, World Class Industries. Stay with us. More honest insight and real world perspective from business owners is coming up on Be Unbelievable. Stay with us. More honest insight and real world perspective from business owners is coming up on Be Unbelievable. Welcome back to Be Unbelievable. Want more inspiring leadership stories? Stay connected to Be Unbelievable and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS. You can also listen to the podcast at www.nowmedia.tv. Now Media is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. So welcome back to Be Unbelievable. We're here with Brent Cobb discussing pivotal moments that shape leaders, not just professionally, but personally. Many people feel they're stuck in long seasons where progress seems invisible. The breakthrough often starts internally before it shows up externally. So what was a defining moment or challenge or season, perhaps, that truly tested you and your leadership?
Yeah, and I think it was, you know, we talked about this a little bit a minute ago, just in terms of that moment when we really needed to diversify, and the solution was, you know, trying to, you know, broaden the you know, that leadership team out to make them, you know, much more part of you know, that effort, the solution, and not just the, you know, those that are, you know, fulfilling the tasks on a daily basis.
What do you mentioned during the session, the 2 day, you know, what do you feel shifted inside internally? Yeah. Did you, we talk about this in Change Your Mind, Create New Results, which your team is involved in, had been involved in. What were you thinking? How were you acting? How were you feeling? Maybe you can put it in those terms.
Well, I think it's, you know, until you get exposed to a different way of thinking, you're just kind of trapped in the way that
you've been doing things.
Yeah, you've been doing things. You know, that's kind of what feels comfortable. And I think you have to, you know, first be exposed to that new
idea.
New thought.
Yeah, new thought.
You know, so I think that's always the first thing is you need to, you know, that needs to kind of fire in your head, and then you need to have a little bit of time to let that idea germinate. And, you know, it's one thing to be exposed to it, but, you know, your mind needs a little bit of time to think through things, whether it's, you know, meditate on it or just kind of give it some soak time, windshield time, to let it germinate a little bit and see where that happens. And then, you know, for me, I think there's always a step of you have to, you know, put it in practice, right? You have to, you know, it's great to have ideas, and ideas are fun, but, you know, until you actually take that step of putting it into practice, really isn't that useful for you.
So tell me, was there a belief? Obviously, there was a belief, and maybe you can, maybe you can speak to that. What was the belief that you had to release or let go of? And did you find it uncomfortable, or how?
Sure. I don't. You know, I think you kind of analyze like, where did I get this? But somehow I'd gotten this belief that, you know, to be a good leader, you have to be a technical expert at all the pieces that are in your control or in your domain, and you know, I don't know where that comes from. I see it a lot in our leaders kind of throughout the company, so I don't know that it's necessarily unique to me, but yeah, that was really the the belief that I had to figure out and to overcome, and yeah, it was certainly uncomfortable.
A challenge.
Yeah. Breaking that.
There's something. This was when I was an E-Myth coach.
Yeah.
We talked about doing it.
Yeah.
And I think there's as I've moved through my business coaching, and now I'm transitioning to kind of like almost retirement.
Yeah.
That there's something about the idea that if you're not doing something, you're not being valuable.
Yeah.
I don't know if that resonates with you as well.
No, it is. I think when you come in and you want to be you're kind of in the middle of it. You're the technical expert. I mean, it doesn't take a lot of effort to get a to-do list of, 20, 30 items and, be involved in, 10 other decisions. And at the end of the day, you're driving home and you're like, oh, yeah, I can put a bunch of these things in my completed or my win column for the day. And so that feedback loop or that, maybe a little bit of a dopamine.
Yep.
Kind of like, I'm doing all this stuff and I'm doing it, I'm doing it pretty good. When you start to invite more people in, I think that feedback loop, you start spending time on building culture, building strategies, building processes. Your feedback loop, is a little bit longer. Like an EOS language, your big rocks are taking 90 days, not 10 minutes. And so, that's a little bit different. That's a little bit more uncomfortable. And, when you have a to-do list, it's like, it's either open or you're crossed it out.
And you're responsible for checking that off, whereas somebody else is responsible and you got to let go of that.
Yeah, true. Yeah. True. And some of those bigger, whether it's a rock or it's a strategy, I mean, those tend to be a little bit more difficult to say, I got that done.
Yeah.
Even if you get really good, clear success statements, it might be a little more difficult to say, I made a ton of progress in developing our culture today.
Well, that's,
your culture isn't going to change today. It's going to change
over time,
a much longer period of time.
Yeah, you're focusing on getting results through others versus you yourself. Yeah. So for someone in the long season, where there's uncertainty, what would you encourage them to focus on right now? When they're in kind of an uncertain, uncomfortable place, like what we call in Dispenza's change your mind, create new results.
Yeah.
It's the unknown.
Yeah.
How do you manage?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it just comes down to you have to give it enough time. I mean, it's going to be uncomfortable, there's, I think, different time frames I've heard. You maybe have a more specific one, but you need to give it that 20 to 30 days where you can start to make something a habit. You get comfortable in it being the new thing as much as you were in kind of your old behavior. So you have to, there's a certain amount of like just push through to get to
being uncomfortable, being uncomfortable.
Exactly. And you got to kind of embrace some of that uncomfortable before you start to see the results or feel that change actually take hold.
Do you find that when you're working with your, because you've got
team,
how many, your team, eight
yeah,
people?
Yeah, there's 8 people on our leadership team, including me, yes.
Yeah, do you find yourself guiding them in that? Do you see that or not?
Yeah, I mean, yes, definitely. I mean, I think it's definitely, there's very few people that can, get comfortable in something new. I feel like I enjoy change generally.
Do you? Yeah.
And
that's great.
Which is more than most people, but I would say I'm not comfortable. I go and make a change, I'm uncomfortable. So I think it's one of those things as a leader, you're coaching people, you just need to be aware of, and you need to be encouraging in that moment and, make sure that you're, there's certain times that you're the cheerleader and certain times that you're kind of the, accountability partner, and I think a lot of times when you understand and realize people are going through change, I think it's time to be the cheerleader.
Was there a point or was there something that helped you that you can remember? Maybe there isn't.
Yeah.
In being going through that uncomfortability of being uncomfortable, something personally maybe.
That's a great question. I think, for me, it was just kind of that desire, having seen what was possible, for instance, in the Traction EOS system. I had some friends that had been using it with some success, and so I think it was kind of like positive peer pressure that they had invited me into their businesses, and I had, some views of like, this is where, it ultimately goes through, or it ultimately can go to, and, so I think it was just more about, kind of that positive peer pressure of knowing that if I push through a little bit more, I could get to that stage.
Yeah,
that
so you had kinda, you had a vision,
yes.
Envisioned future based on what you could see other people doing.
Yes, yeah. Correct. Yeah, that gave me kind of that motivation to push through and to not, to not give up. And giving up maybe meant that I'd go back to the spot that I knew wasn't sustainable, wasn't scalable, wasn't where we needed to be as a company.
Yeah, and you've done, it's incredible, right? 50 people to over, that's five times in 20 years. That's,
So it's been a great story. Lots of people that are a huge part of that story.
Wasn't it your CFO, I think, that had kind of introduced you to Traction? Or
correct,
was that?
Yeah. He was, so we had at the time I had a fractional CFO.
Yep.
And he had been, had some exposure through some other engagements that he had been a part of. And then he was also very instrumental in us finding, we were trying to kind of self-implement, and this as being a coach.
It's difficult to do.
It just doesn't work very well, and you make some excuses on why this doesn't work doesn't work, and having a coach able to come and say, that's probably not true.
So, yeah. So let's go to how people can connect with you. Let's learn a little bit about how do you want people, maybe if somebody's watching, how do they, and maybe there's some people out there that maybe like this idea of, what your business does and how they can reach out to you.
Yeah. So probably three different ways to connect with me. The World Class Industries website, which is worldclassind.com, would have more information about what we're doing as a company. I'm also on LinkedIn as Brent R. Cobb. And then my email address is brc@worldclassind.com.
Thank you. So coming up, we explore the grind of the day-to-day work that builds real success. And we're back. I'm Doug Wick, and this is Be Unbelievable on Now Media Television. Let's continue. Stay with us. More honest insight and real-world perspective from business owners is coming up on Be Unbelievable. Welcome back to Be Unbelievable. Let's talk about the part people rarely see, the grind behind long-term leadership. The challenge many leaders face is staying connected to purpose when the daily pressure feels relentless and joy feels distant. Now, having been an owner myself, I know what this, it's so easy. You get caught up in the tactical, right?
Yeah.
That you lose sight of why did I start?
Yeah.
Right. So what's the grind of leadership really look like behind the scenes?
Sure. Yeah. I think you're hitting it on the head, and it means that you have to be intentional about where your time's going. Cause if you can walk into the office, you can quickly get wrapped up in what the fire of the day is if you let yourself. And so I think just being intentional about, starting the day in terms of, what really are my goals for today and not let the day happen.
And how do you do that? Do you do that the night before? Do you do that the day you come in? When?
I do it start the day. Well, a little bit the day before, but, so I'll kind of describe two things that I, do.
Yeah, please.
So the one thing is I manually keep a task list, kind of a list of, and it's got what my goals are for the quarter. Make sure those are kind of front and center. Then I've got a list of some of the to-dos that I've been kind of lined out the night before, and I spend some time prioritizing that. And then I've got another little section where if I get something done, I move it to complete. And that kind of is nice to be able to
see that.
And I don't like, you know, you could do this with lots of tools and Outlook and things like that. But, you know, a lot of times when you click complete, it just kind of goes away. And I like seeing.
You like seeing it. I like seeing it sit there.
And then I've got another section that's kind of like things that are in a holding pattern. And so I keep that up kind of throughout the day, making sure that I keep coming back to, you know, what I wanted to do at the beginning of the day.
I'm curious because, you know, 20 years you've been doing this.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can imagine this. How did it change from maybe the first couple of years to where you're at now?
Yeah. Probably a lot of paper, you know, I was kind of notorious about, you know, I'd keep all these journals and then it would be like, well, where does this go? Like, you know, you keep it for a while, then you throw it away. And this is nice because it's just easier to, you know, I don't forget it at home. So I think probably more, you know, of a transition from paper to electronic, but you know, there's been a lot of iterations in between in that I haven't really liked some of the electronics solutions.
Yeah.
And so I go, you know, I just use, it's literally on the, like the text edit app, which is like your least sexy, interesting app on your Mac, but that's what I use.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So talk to me about stress.
Yeah.
Stress, you know, is high and energy is low. How do you manage?
Yeah. Well, I think for like my number one stress management is every day I work out. You know,
okay.
So I need to get you know, some stretching, some sweat.
When do you do that?
I first get up. So,
okay.
So there's two things that I do when I first get up. Usually I do, you know, I think this is something we share a faith, and you know, so I'll read some scriptures. Usually the daily mass reading, and then do some reflection time, and then I'll work out. Those are kind of my first two things, and usually I do those before anyone else in my house is up and moving and creating.
So what time do you get up?
Usually,
if I can ask.
Usually 4 to 6, 6 o'clock.
Okay,
So the rest of my house is usually up closer to 6:30.
Yeah, okay. And do you have a, because we've talked about this, do you have a daily meditation process, or do you?
Yeah, either, you know, and I kind of switch off. So I'll do Lecto Divina, which is like a kind of a Catholic scripture kind of thing, or I'll do meditation. I've got several of the Dr. Joe meditations.
So let's talk about stress. How do you manage it during the day?
During the day, yeah. So I think that's a great question. So I think, you know, for me, you know, and I have to work at this, is just like not getting caught up in the moment. And so I think it's easy to, stressful situation, something gets brought to you that needs to get done. And I just try to catch myself a little bit and say, okay, let's just take a step back. Let's not get caught in the emotion of the situation. You know, what are some of the things that we can do now? What are some of the things we need to get in motion? And just work on trying to not immediately react.
Okay. Has that changed?
Yeah, I think that I've got, you know, so it's always, you know, am I great at it? You know, you ask different people in my life, they probably give you, you know, mixed results. I think it's gotten, you know, I think it continues to get better over time. It's one of those things that's always a bit of a work in process. And so you can, you know, reflect at the end of the day and go, okay, I got better or not. There's always going to be situations that maybe you couldn't do it,
could have been better, right?
Yeah, you didn't show up in the best possible way, and so it's not.
Part of the process of what we call emotional intelligence, which is part of our change your mind, create new results, because emotional intelligence is that ability to not
step away, reflect, look at it from the outside a little.
So what part of your identity has had to evolve to sustain your long-term leadership responsibility? Do you have a thought there?
Yeah. I mean, I think it goes back a little bit to what we were talking about earlier, which is, you know, I don't, what needed to evolve was, I don't need to be the answer guy, you know, and I think I, you know, for better or worse, I got some, you know, dopamine or
satisfaction, you know, having that. I would almost think that's probably the most difficult thing to give, to let go of, is that feeling of
I'm under control.
I'm Superman or whatever.
Whatever, and
yeah.
Really, you know, kind of shift to be, you know, celebrate when the team does well, when you see a leader that, you know, steps up and is really, you know, proactively identifying issues, proactively coming up with solutions and making things happen, you know, really, you know, work through others, celebrate their successes and not get caught up in, you know, that moment. You know, kind of moment to moment.
Yeah. Yeah. You've you know, I don't know 20 years,
yeah.
You know, I remember us in,
Toastmasters
and I know how I struggled and
yeah.
I remember, you know,
well,
and how you,
too.
You know,
yeah.
and how
yeah.
you evolved, but I, seeing the team, you know, just last year, mm-hmm. you've got just
yeah.
teams that are not afraid to get their hands
yeah.
dirty and they come up with ideas and
yeah,
solve
things. Yeah, I think
things.
That's one of the most rewarding things is to see
yeah.
that growth. And I think at some point you realize, hey, I'm the one that's kind of retarding this growth. I'm the one that's standing in the way of this person stepping up or that person stepping up. If I gave them more space, you know, they can they get more of a chance to hit their ceiling as a leader and as you know a business leader.
Yeah, yeah, almost like you're a bottleneck, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I think
yeah.
that's definitely the case.
So how can leaders then stay connected to meaning when work feels heavy? How do you?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question. I think this is one that, you know, we're in a not, you know, tractor parts and construction. I mean,
yeah.
it's not, you know, it's not maybe the same as if you were, you know, a doctor or a teacher, you know,
yeah.
something where you can really, you know, see the purpose and the meaning of what is going on. So we
yeah.
spend a fair amount of time, you know, just connecting some dots. And so, hey, you know, we're not growing food, but, you know, we're supplying parts and assemblies that go into machines that do grow food that, you know, feed the world. We're maybe not, you know, creating roads and infrastructure, but we're supplying components and assemblies and parts that are part of that process. And so really, really working to make sure people understand, okay, I'm doing this work or this task, and that's contributing to what
yeah.
we're doing as world class, and world class is contributing in this way to our customers who are doing, you know, this in the world. And you know, I think some of that is, you think is kind of obvious, but I think it's one of those things that as a leadership team, we always, you know, the more we talk about it, some of the more connections that we'll make to that impact.
And some companies just don't have that at all. I got to believe to go from where you were with 50 people to 270, that had to be, or was it, I guess, a big part? Because
yeah.
you've grown tremendously.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different ingredients. I think we were at a, you know, at a great time in terms of what customers needed from us and what we were able to offer. And so, I mean, you always need a little bit of, you know, the market needs to have
yes.
some,
yeah.
you know, unmet demand that you're filling. So I think that's a key ingredient. But, you know, you have to deliver. And, you know, I think enabling the leadership of, you know, first our senior leadership team and then seeing the senior leadership team enable their leadership and that, you know, kind of cascading down into the levels of the organization that really are where being a good company or a great company and an okay company, it doesn't happen at the senior leadership team. It happens at the level of people that are making
yeah.
things happen.
I being able to transfer that down to
yeah.
them,
yeah,
yeah, yeah, is critical.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So up next, we close with what becomes possible when we lead from authenticity.
And we're back. I'm Doug Wick, and this is Be Unbelievable on Now Media Television. Let's continue. Stay with us. More honest insight and real world perspective from business owners is coming up on Be Unbelievable.
Welcome back to Be Unbelievable. Don't miss a second of this show or any Now Media TV favorites, streaming live on demand anytime. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS, or listen to podcasts at www.nowmedia.tv. Now Media TV is available 24/7, so the stories you care about are always in reach. So welcome back to Be Unbelievable. In this final segment, we explore authenticity and how leading from truth changes both results and fulfillment. So many people fear that being fully committed to themselves could cost them opportunities, when in reality, authenticity builds trust, clarity, and long-term impact. When did you realize, it's a good question, authenticity, mattered more than fitting expectations?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's when you don't have all the answers to a specific problem. You know, I think that's one of the things that you learn as you evolve.
Do you mean you actually would say, I don't know?
Yeah. You say, I don't know. You know, you're transparent with the team that, hey, I don't think we have, you know, we certainly don't have all the information to make a kind of a bulletproof decision here, but, you know, we're going to have to make a decision one way or the other.
Yeah. And did you have to overcome something was that hard for you to say,
yeah,
I don't know?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, my personality, I want to control that outcome. And if I don't have enough information to really, you know, make a fully informed decision, you know, my chances of controlling that outcome, you know,
diminish. Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of like simple stats or math at some level.
Yeah. Yeah. And we talk about, if you remember in the Change Your Mind, Create New Results, we talk about the river of change and being uncomfortable,
yes,
and you navigated that.
No, I mean, I think it makes me think of a project that we're doing.
I was going
right
to ask that
with a large OEM customer. And you know,
does everybody know what OEM stands for?
Great point.
Yeah.
Original equipment manufacturer. So, you know, someone that has a product typically that is, you know, has a significant manufacturing component of it, mm-hmm. Physical product kind of company.
Yep.
So one of our customers, one of our five customers had come to us, and they had a problem in that they wanted to make these rather large radiator assemblies, and they didn't have the square footage in their engine making facility to do that. And it was a new product that was coming out, and so they really didn't know how many of these they were gonna sell. And so it was one of those things where we could have said, well, you know, it's kind of hard to price this. You don't know if you're gonna sell 10 of these or 200 of these, or you know, they at the time had hope for more, and so we could have said, you know, seven-year, 10-year, that's probably not our deal. Or we could have, you know, what we chose to do was say, you know, let's go on this journey with them.
Cool.
Yeah.
And?
Yeah, so this one is you know, they don't always turn out this way,
yeah.
You know this, but, you know, this coming year, so it's been about a 7 or 8 year evolution that we've gone from making 7, which may be a little bit less than they originally told us, to I think this year we're going to make close to 3,000.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been quite a journey. We've had to reconfigure the assembly process that we use. So these started to be made in our Cedar Falls location. The volume outstripped the capacity in that facility. We had to move a portion, or more than a portion, probably half the production to one of our facilities in Hiawatha. The bill of materials is fairly lengthy and complex, and so we've had to change from real low volume metal fab suppliers to kind of medium metal fab to now this current iteration at the 3000. So there's been a lot of change and evolution that have happened over that period of time.
Yeah, that's got to be challenging to make those decisions, because there's a lot of times where something like this wouldn't work at all, right?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I think you always remember the ones that don't work maybe a little bit more than the ones that that do. You maybe get that scar tissue as you go along in your career, but you have to continue to remind yourself that if you don't take chances, nothing good can happen.
Yeah, nothing happens.
Yeah, maybe baseball analogy. Maybe if you don't go up to bat, your chances of getting a hit are
zero.
Pretty limited. So pretty much zero. If you go up, Hall of Fame hitter only hits the ball a third of the time. So you have to, make sure that your mindset is correct. And there's things that you could do to manage that risk. But just completely dismissing opportunities is not a great
yeah. So one of the questions I have here is, what fear do you have to face when you begin to show up more honestly?
Yeah,
even in this situation, because you're going to make mistakes.
Well,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to make mistakes. I think if we end up and ultimately we decide, hey, we wanted to go down this route and we were tapped out and it was 7 or 10 of these a year, the team is looking back going, why would we go into this business? This is kind of a silly business, and this creating all this headache and work, and we're really, there's no way we could be making money doing it. So I think that's one of the things that you have to overcome is looking silly, and you look silly a time or two, and I think you just, what I had to work on or practice on is when things don't go as planned, and when things are a failure or a flop or whatever the term that you want to use is maybe take a step back and remind people that we've got to take chances. This is the situation that we're in, and we're gonna figure out how to either exit that project or exit that customer or move on. But there was a reason that we got into that. It hasn't worked out how we wanted.
Yeah.
But there was a legitimate reason that we went into and decided to take on this project.
I'm going to go off a little bit, because I know you guys have been working on AI. Mm-hmm. And most companies are struggling with it or doing something with it. That's kind of a similar situation, right, with AI, artificial intelligence.
It is, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of learning that takes place, and just kind of the nature of what our customers are. I would say our culture has always been very results oriented, and when you get into technology, results are definitely not guaranteed. You're trying out new things like AI and other things. The odds are more in the favor of it not working. You have to learn something, change it, evolve. Move on to the next iteration. And so as we've explored with AI and other technologies, we've really also embraced our culture of learning and talk about what we've learned in the process and less about the actual results. We feel with some of our initial runs with AI are further down the road. And less like, we're just
immediate.
So like kind of in the EOS parlance, it's like you can't just set up this rock and say, I'm gonna do, this week one, this week two, this week three, and at the end of the quarter,
it's gonna
this
be
is
there.
What's gonna happen.
Yeah, it just
more,
doesn't work that way.
More likely, week one, you're like, this totally is not gonna work at all. I'm gonna redo this whole.
We need another 3 months.
Yeah,
exactly.
So you have to kind of say, I learned a lot in week one. And I redid my rock in week two, and maybe week three we take another swing at it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think it's just, you know, it's a kind of moving from that like results mindset to a learning mindset.
Yeah, yeah, love it. So what would you say to someone afraid? We talked about, I talked about this with Wade, and Dr. Joe Dispenza talks about this gap that we have between who we present to the world and who we authentically are,
and
the idea being to close that gap, to live more purposefully. Knowing you, I know you may look at it differently, but I feel like you're living more authentically.
Yeah, I mean, I think you keep, you know, daily work on, you know, closing those gaps.
So what's been the result of that, personally and professionally, do you feel?
Well, I mean, I think to me, you know, you mentioned just, you know, some of those situations where, you know, there's, you know, higher emotion or, you know, how do you react to pressure and those things. And I feel like when you're, you know, in that authentic self, you know, you can show up in those pressure-packed situations in a much better, much more constructive, much more authentic way. And, you know, I think sometimes when they're separated, you've kind of created this facade that, you know, when issues arise or when tensions get hot, you maybe feel like that's starting to crumble, and that creates anger. And if you're living that authentic, you have things in perspective, you're more open to, I don't have the answers. I don't know if this is gonna work out. And so when things go wrong, you haven't put yourself out there as Oz or somebody that's gonna,
Thanks for watching Be Unbelievable. Join me next time as we continue the conversation every business owner needs, but rarely hears.